Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we are here. The moment all 10 of you have been waiting for. That's how many subscribers I've got. So, without further ado, let's crack on. I'm Jacob Boone. Thank you is what I want to start off with already. Like, I'm absolutely buzzing. This couldn't have really gone any better to start off with. So, hopefully, the upward trajectory continues and we just keep moving on to bigger and better things together. So thank you. As you can probably see, by the way, that I'm not actually looking directly at the camera. I'm not very used to this. So there's going to be a few teething problems and we're just going to get through it together. Yeah, take the piss out of me. It's fine. I can take it. Trust me. Let's start off with a little bit about me. I'm just going to make myself a little bit more comfortable, you know. Chin chin. Woo! It's got a kick like a chick with a dick. So, yeah, the reason why I wanted to do this is for a number of reasons. Obviously, the ultimate end goal would be to be able to just not work on the head, be financially stable enough to just stay at home with my loved ones and my family and just be able to, you know, be a proper dad. But also be able to afford, you know, just the usual mundane 9-to-5 shit that you need to be able to afford, like, you know, electric and heating and food, you know, and the roof over our head. I'm fortunate that I do have a very good job, which obviously really fucking helps. I've worked hard, I must admit. Like, I've worked very hard over my working life. I started right at the bottom as a labourer and a groundworker and always wanted to achieve more, you know, always set your goals high, always want to aspire to be better. If I could give anybody any advice, I started off I didn't do well at school, although I was clever, I didn't apply myself properly through drugs. Used to smoke quite a bit of cannabis, not afraid to admit it. Probably didn't put me on the right path, but it's a learning curve, you know, I got that out of my system. A lot of people don't get that out of their system, then they find it too late, and then ultimately it ruins people's lives. When they should be getting on with things. So you live and learn. Like I said, started off pushing a brush around and here we are, you know. I'm a section foreman for a big construction company, which is Kier. It wasn't always Kier. It was initially Buckingham Group Contractors, who anybody that knows construction will know what happened to them and the sad demise of them. And yeah, it's people at that company that gave me my chance to show what I could do. And yeah, I've got a lot of time, as special mentions to Oliver and Lawrence Gutteridge. They've really helped me a lot and given me a lot of time. Even today, for example, my little lad, Harrison, he wasn't well and I was busy this morning on site. Said to Ollie, I was like, look, mate, I've got to go. He was like, yeah, no worries. He's always said family first, you know, or however hard we work and things like that. Don't forget, it is always family first. And he's never made me feel bad about that. And when I've had things like that and times where I've needed to go home, he's been absolutely fine with it. Same for his dad as well. And there's a lot of other people that I've met on the job as well that have helped me out no end. So a big thank you to them as well. I've met some really cool friends as well. One of them's just left, Reece. He's now off. Again, onto bigger and better things. And for a young lad, he's really got his head screwed on. So he's an inspiration. So fair play to him and good luck, mate. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. So I am a father of two beautiful boys, Travis and Harrison Boone. Travis is 4 years old and Harrison is now, quick maths. I think he's now 7 months old. Someone's probably going to correct me, like the missus, but hey-ho, that's what she does. They're everything to me. Other than, obviously, my wife-to-be, they are absolutely everything to me. I live and breathe for them and her. I work hard. I get on with things. I crack on just for them, you know, because you do it for the love. You do it because they're, you know, what life's all about is family, you know. So they're a massive inspiration to me. They are why I get up in the morning, you know. If I feel shit, if I feel tired, sick, whatever, I get up, I crack on for them. Because you've got to, you know. I am the breadwinner. All right, Kirsty does work. She's currently on maternity leave. and she is a fantastic midwife, I might add. Not that I'd ever get to see that, you know. It's not like a job where I could turn up and just watch her doing her job. Like, I don't really think a couple's going to want me in a corner. Like, you don't mind, dear, while I just observe my partner doing what she does and excels at, because I'm curious. She ain't going to want me seeing her snatch, is she? You know, this poor woman ain't going to want me at the end of the bed kind of voyeuring on the whole magical experience it is birth. So, yeah, I just, people are like, how do you know she's a good midwife? Well, she got a distinction when she was doing her uni degree through COVID whilst being pregnant with Travis. She's very career driven and focused, and I love that about her. She's, yeah, she's, again, another inspiration. Yeah, so, and the way she talks so passionately about things and knows so much. She's got such a good knowledge, and so much so that it's brushed off on me. There's things that I've picked up on and kind of remember through her studying and always talking about it and things like that, that sink in, which is relevant to the story of one of the two births. So there is a reason I'm talking about it. So yeah, a little bit of background. When we found out about Travis, it was something that we talked about, although we hadn't been together long. It was something that we had openly discussed and agreed that we felt, we knew, you know, like, you know, when you meet somebody, I don't know, some people wouldn't have met the right one, the one, you know, but you just get this feeling, you just know there's something inside you that I can't describe. I wish I could, but I can't put words to it. But yeah, there's something inside you that just like that, you know. And we'd spoken about it, like a sensible conversation, like not just like a flash in the pan, like, oh yeah, it'd be good to have kids, wouldn't it? Like, which is what people tend to do when they're young and in love and things like that. And yeah, so we were prepared, and I don't think our families would have necessarily agreed with that, because we hadn't been together long, but I'd like to think that now they realise, yeah, we were deadly fucking serious, you know? So yeah, but at the time of finding out, I did have an addiction. I had a quite bad cocaine addiction, to be honest. I spent a lot of my money and time on it, and was quite a selfish person with it, to be honest. Like I said, I spent so much of my money on it, and obviously all drugs are quite selfish in a sense, you know, especially like class A's. They're very like consuming of yourself as a person and your time, and it's largely what you think about. You think about it a lot when, like in scenarios where you shouldn't really, like, prime example, you might go down the pub and watch a game of football, but as soon as you have a pint, you're like, right, come on, let's get a banging. Yeah, who's got a line for me? And I've kind of lost friendships since coming away from that, and I often think, was it me? Have I upset people? Or was it just the fact that we now don't have that in common, you know? Am I missing out? No, I've got my family, so I'm not missing out at all. So it is what it is, you know. And to me, quitting that habit is possibly one of my biggest life achievements. Obviously, I've got my kids, finding the one, which is obviously Kirsty. My career, I've done very well at, and will continue to keep driving myself and pushing myself. You know, this job is a very prestigious job, and it will come to an end soon. There's not long left, although I've been on it 4 years. So I've been clean now. We found out we were having Travis in December 2019. And we agreed, it was around just after Christmas. We'd been to Amsterdam, and it's possibly the best holiday I've ever had. I'll always have memories of that holiday. It was wicked. Quite ironic, because obviously we've gone on a holiday where we've gone and smoked a bit, you know. But went in Amsterdam, so to speak, you know. I said to Kirsty, I was like, look, I don't want to leave you guys behind because I've decided to powder my nose, so to speak, you know, like just for a night out. It's not worth it. So, yeah, December 2019 was the last time I took any form of drugs. And we are now in January, albeit the back end of January 2025. So I'm now 5 years clean, which is fantastic. Like, it's incredible. And if you'd have told me this, obviously, 5-6 years ago, I would not have believed you. I'd have been like, no, I'm telling you, mate. Or a boy, anyway. So yeah, that's a really big achievement. So yeah, we obviously Kirsty fell pregnant and COVID hit, which wasn't ideal. So we had a lot to do in quite a short space of time. So at the time I was living with my grandma, bless her, and I was looking after her as well at the same time. Kirsty was living at home with her parents, and we were like, right, we need a place. You know, we're having a kid, we need a place. So we looked around, we found somewhere nice and cheap in Rushden, moved out there, and I've never looked back really, albeit the house was lovely, proper old Victorian, two up, two down, like, lovely house. The letting agent was a complete arsehole, and we had nothing but hassle, and it was quite a shame because the house itself was fantastic. It was at a really good price, we were renting. So yeah, it's a shame, but we got through it, and it was in that house that obviously Kirsty went into labour. Now it's quite a decent story. So we went to bingo, it was on a Sunday, I believe. We'd gone bingo Sunday night with her dad and one or two of her brothers, I can't quite recall now. And it was after bingo, Kirsty had sort of started feeling a few twinges. So we were like, right, let's, do you know what I mean? Let's come and let's go and have a little walk around the car park, see if that gets you going. And obviously, it's what they say, isn't it? Walking is very good for you. It can bring it on. So off we went. We were a little stroll around the car park. Kirsty was like, it's cold, let's go home. Fairs. So we did. We ventured home. And Kirsty was obviously uncomfortable, but not to the point where like alarm bells were ringing or anything like that. So yeah, went to bed as normal. As I said to her, if you need me in the night, wake me up, etc., etc. Not really knowing what was going to happen, because you don't, you know, it's your first child. You're not prepared for anything, no matter how many books or anything you fucking read or do research or people tell you or share their experiences. You're not ready or prepared for anything. Trust me. And that's not to scare somebody, it's just a crazy experience. So we went off, I went off to bed, and I remember waking in the night and Kirsty was like pacing the hallway. I was a bit like, that's strange. I said to her, you're right? She was like, yeah, I'm fine. Cool. Just can't sleep or something like that, uncomfortable. Like, okay, fair enough. Which wasn't the norm because Kirsty was very big for her size. She's only small, but big baby. So yeah. Just didn't think anything of it. Woke up, alarm went off for work. I was working for a company at the time, working out towards Peterborough, I believe it was. And obviously they were aware of Kirsty and obviously the condition she was in. So yeah, they were sound as well. So yeah, out there, I was on a job. And basically in the morning, I said to Kirsty, like, are you going to be all right? She was like, yeah, no, I'm fine. Go to work. Like, it's nothing. So I was like, okay, cool. And then I think she called me on the way to work. I was like, look, how are you? Is everything all right? She was like, yeah, just uncomfortable. Like, I'm sure it'll pass. You know, I don't think it is yet, but I don't think I'm in labour. I was like, okay, cool. And like, remember, this is COVID as well. So it's not like we can just go into the hospital and I can be with her and everything will be sweet. It's obviously still technically lockdown and critical work and social distancing and all of that fucking palaver that we all had to endure for potentially what was no more than just an average, well, a severe flu, you know, do the research. So yeah, I go to work, sweet. I get a phone call, it's before break. Break then was like 10:30, I think it was. And I get a phone call again. I'm like, you're all right? And she's like, kind of, I want to say it's mooing a little bit, for lack of a better term, right? She's kind of like talking to me, but a bit like, and I'm like, you're all right? She's like, yeah, like, I'll be fine. I just, you know, just, you better let work know that you might need to go. And I was like, okay, sound. Like, do you want me to come now? No, I'll be fine. Okay, cool. Put the phone down. 20 minutes later, get a phone call. She's moving again. I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, well, I'm bouncing on the ball. And I'm like, okay, yeah, cool. Yeah, I can see where this is going. I said, do you want me to come home? Do you think I should come home now? She's like, no, honestly, it's just fine. Like, I will tell you. I was like, okay, cool. Sound, no worries. About 10 minutes later, I think it was break time, I'm sat in the car. Next thing, I get another phone call. And she's proper moving this time. She's like, I heard a cow. I'm like, you need to come home. Everything's like a bit of a song, a bit of a warble to it. So I'm like, right, okay, I'm on route. Like, let me tell the gaffer and I'm on my way. So at this point, right, shitting it proper. I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? Because we obviously, Kirsty at the time was working at a certain hospital. So we chose to go to that certain hospital. So off we went. Well, she wasn't working, but she was like a student midwife there. So I got home. That's the one we're going to go to. Sound close to all the family. Sweet. Makes sense. So we drive over there. We got all her notes. She's on the bed. She's on all fours and really uncomfortable. And at this point, I'm like, what do I do here? Like, I'm rubbing her back. She's like, don't fucking touch me. All right, okay, cool. What should we do? Like, where's the bag? Kirsty's very prepared. Luckily, she's got all the bags ready. I know where they are. She's briefed me on this, which is handy. So I'm like, right, I get all the gear in the motor. Shout out the Honda Civic. Love that motor. Proper motor. Throw it all in there. Throw Kirsty in there, so to speak. Obviously not. And off we go. Make our journey. She's very uncomfortable in the car. Like, she's something like this. Like, climbing out of the fucking chair a bit. And I'm like, oh, Christ. I'm just trying to drive within the speed limit. So, yeah, we get there in decent time. And, obviously, because it's COVID, there's certain rules and regulations that we had to go through. So, Kirsty had to mask up. Off she went into the hospital. And then she messaged me, they're doing all the checks, blah, blah, blah. And I think if I remember rightly, she was 3 or 4 centimetres. And she couldn't come back until she was 5. I'll probably get my numbers wrong here. Anyway, there was numbers. And she couldn't come back until she was a certain amount centimetres dilated. And then obviously I could then come in as well. So it was like, right, okay, we'll go to her mum and dad's because it's nice and close. So we went to the mum and dad's and she was like, right, run me a bath. So I ran her a bath, you know, draw the lady a bath. And it was helping. It was helping with the pain. She was in and out of the bath. I still don't really know what to do, yeah? I'll be honest, but I'm there. I'm trying to be supportive. She was taking whatever painkillers she can when she was pregnant. Can't remember again. It's been a while. And when I say she was in and out of the bath, it was like she was hokey-cokey in it, yeah? She's got her left leg in, she's got her right leg out, in, out, shake it all about, right? But it was helping, like being in and out of the warm water must have obviously helped ease the pain. I will never know, no male ever will know, but it looked fucking painful, man, I'm not going to lie. So I was there, I'd been supportive, you know, and we were there for a good hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, something like that. And she was climbing the walls at this point. She's like, right, I think we need to go back so I can be examined again. I was like, okay, cool. So we did. Off we went. It might have even been longer. It might have even been for like three or four hours. Either way, we went back. And when we went back, she got examined again. Sure enough, they're like, yeah, cool. In you come. Sound. So in we went. And obviously, we got put in a lovely little room. And it was nice. You know, it was all going well. Kirsty was in and out of the pool. She was progressing lovely. And I thought, sweet, like, she's obviously doing really well here, which is like really encouraging for me because I'm not worried. I like, this is where she works. She knows these people. And it made me feel more at ease. Maybe false sense of security. I don't know. But yeah, I was just trying to do everything I can. If she needed something, I was there. If she went to hold my hand, fucking hell, did she hold my hand? My hand's never been the same, to be honest. A lady's grip when she's in labor is supernatural. So yeah, there it was. And I was just doing what I could. If the midwife needed me to do something, I was offering, oh, can I lift that for you? Can I do this? Like, just trying to be helpful, but not being like a pain in the arse and be in the way. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, right up the midwife's behind. Like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Do you know what I mean? You got to let them do their thing as well at the same time. A couple of pointers. Don't just sit there on your phone. Yeah, that's my personal opinion. Do not just sit there on your phone. It's not boring. Trust me. It's intense. Whether you see it that way or not, it is this mad. There is life being brought into this world. Yeah? Don't sit on your phone. Don't be sitting there scrolling TikTok or fucking Instagram or MySpace or Bebo or whatever. Get your head involved, yeah? And just be an ear when you need to be an ear. And be a mouthpiece when you need to be a mouthpiece. Don't overtalk. Don't just say nothing either. You will know. I mean, I'm not saying that people go into this thing and I'm like some sort of expert. I'm not. But this is just, I'm just trying, like I said, if I can help one person, sound, happy days. I feel like I've achieved something and it's wicked and it's good for me. And it's good for me to vent and get it off my chest, you know, because it's not something that I talk about a lot. So, right, sound. we're progressing really well. The waters are broken, right? And then things kind of stall at around 6-7 centimeters, I think it was. And we're going in and out of the pool, and then Kirsty's getting like a water infection, and we're not really progressing. And hours are going past, and there's like change of shifts and things like that, and people are going home, and new people are coming in, and this is where it gets a little bit messy. So she gets put on like this hormone drip, and Travis was fine, but he was kind of, I think they call it ROT, see? And that means he's kind of like coming out like this, yeah? And when you've only got like a small little fucking window, and your head should just come nice and straight, yeah? But it's coming out like this, and it kind of makes your head like, you know, nice and, yeah, but then you turn your head like that, a lot bigger and wider. Yeah, not great. And then because she wasn't dilating, and because he was kind of trying to come out at the wrong angle, imagine it's just like that, yeah? Constantly. So they put her on this hormone drip that's going to increase her contractions. So then instead of it going like that, it's now more frequent, wicked, which is then basically battering her cervix. So it's getting swollen, which then makes it harder to come out because it's almost closing this very small gap as it is, wicked. Obviously we didn't know this at the time, but yeah, so I tried grabbing a little bit of sleep where I could. Bless her, she didn't really get a lot of rest. And then the morning came and it was like, right, we're gonna have to basically go for a C-section, and this is something Kirsty did not want. C-sections, in my opinion, and I get this opinion from Kirsty, and I do understand it now as well, everyone's just like so blasé about the fact that they're gonna have a C-section. Yeah, I'll have a C-section, yeah, don't give me that. None of that, mate. Just, you know, out of sunroof, as it were. Yeah, just pluck him out. I'm just going to think about it. Yeah. He's getting a knife. He's getting his tool. And he's going to go, yeah, across your stomach. Yeah. Through your fat, your muscle, everything. Yeah. And then he's going to pull a human being out. Yeah. Just think about that for a second. Think about it. It's mad. Yeah, it's mad to think that another human being, a life form, is coming out of you, and they're pulling it out of you, right? So Kirsty was a bit panicked, didn't enjoy it. She got quite emotional, which is, it's understandable. And this is where I then start to like panic. But as a male and in that situation, because I'm there as her support, and because I'm her only support as well, being COVID, obviously I'm just really trying to keep it cool. I'm like, right, okay, we can do this, babe. Like, it's all right. You work here. These people are going to look after you. Like, they care about you. You're not some random off the street. We're quite fortunate in this scenario. It's going to be all right. Yeah, don't panic. We're cool. I was there side by side. I go off and get changed. Put all this gear on, right, and the little hat. Yeah, looking like some sort of like a surgeon. Glad I didn't get mistaken for one and get given a knife, because I wouldn't have known what to do with it. All right, I could barely use a knife in the kitchen. So, in we go, and at this point, I'm proper bricking it, to be honest. I am. I'm nervous. I'm scared. But, you know, I'm going to meet my boy. Yeah? We know we're having a boy. I'm going to meet my boy. I'm buzzing, all right? I'm going to meet little baby Travis. She's going to be absolutely fine, right? So, in we go, and, everything sort of starts off normal. You know, they're all going through all the stuff. All the checks, yeah, sound cool, good to go, bush, right? And Travis, like, it's all going normally. Travis comes out, and then there's like a point where they're like, right, you need to bleep Adam, who's one of the consultants, so to speak. He's really good at what he does, right? So, I mean, I'm just using a name here. I don't want to use his real name, so yeah. They can't get hold of this geezer. Wicked. That's really encouraging. And then I hear that they're calling out that she's having a PPH, which is a postpartum hemorrhage. And I only know this because of Kirsty obviously doing her qualifications and whatnot. So I know what that means. And at that point, my heart sinks. Yeah. My heart just goes. And it comes out my arsehole, if I'm being completely honest. Because I know that then she's bleeding quite a lot, and it's serious. Like, this is where it gets really serious. She's bleeding a lot, and things can go very wrong if it's not sorted. And then when they, like I said, they call out for this fella and they can't get hold of him, that's when I get like really worried, because obviously they need help. They're clearly not, the people that are here are obviously struggling to deal with that scenario, and they can't get hold of this geezer who's meant to be the one that's going to come and fix it, and they can't get hold of him. So I'm now like really, really fucking worried. Yeah, I'm really worried. And it gets to the point where, like, obviously Travis is out and I'm buzzing. But at the minute, my focus is on my partner. And I feel really bad for that. Even to this day, I feel really bad that I was so worried. My boy's here and I didn't really get to enjoy that experience. Like, I was buzzing, I was crying. I got to cut the cord. I'll never forget it. But in this moment, because I knew that Kirsty wasn't well, my focus is on her. I want her to be okay. I want her to share this moment with me. And I felt like we had that taken away. And it's one of them things. Yeah, no one saw that happening, but it happened. And it was fucking scary. And I just remember her being sick and telling me she needed to be sick, which she was obviously laying down and she's like almost choking on it. And it was, it was bad. And yeah, so luckily, and I do say luckily, and they managed to install something that's called a Bakri balloon, and it kind of like swells up and it stops the hemorrhage. And if that hadn't worked, it would have been a hysterectomy, which is where they just take out all of her reproductive, I don't know if organs is the right term here, because I'm not a doctor, you know, I do dig in holes, but they would have taken out all of her womb and everything to stop it bleeding and obviously to save her life. She lost 2.3 litres of blood in that moment. Google that. It was like a murder scene. Now, don't get me wrong, I didn't see loads of it, but it was bad. You know, like, it's not a joke. So she had to have two blood transfusions. But there was a moment where once obviously I knew she was going to be okay, and they'd sorted all that out. And I thank every single one of them for being able to sort that out in that moment. Granted, obviously it was very scary, but we got there and they did ultimately save my soulmate's fucking life. I got a moment then with my boy, and they were like, come on, you can go into the ward, she'll be in soon, they're going to sort her out, stitch her back up, do all the nitty gritty. And I got this moment with my boy, you know, my boy, my flesh and blood, me, my little nothing, whatever, but that is something I will remember on my deathbed, and that's probably one of the last things I'll recount. And that moment of just looking at him and his little face, his perfect little face, and his little nose, and he was quite red because obviously he's been, you know, and he had what was called, I think it's a kappa. So he had like a bit of a cone head, to be completely honest. Yeah, it kind of went like stretched back a bit from where he'd been sort of stuck, and obviously their skulls and stuff are quite, and their bones are quite soft at that age, just quite impressionable. And I just remember sat there telling him that I'm always going to look after him, and I'm always going to be there, and I will. And this is one of the things why I'm glad that I'm doing this, and hope that technology stays as it is, and that YouTube don't delete loads of videos, because in years and years to come, when I'm not here anymore or something like that, Travis and Harrison will be able to look back at this video. So yeah, anyway, Kirsty came out, and luckily she was all right, and she looked fucked, let's be honest. Which you would. You've lost fucking over half your blood. So they're pumping blood into her. And I just remember her holding him, but with this like real downward smile. But not that she could help it, but she was just drawn, you know. She literally had her life almost taken from her and sucked out. And I'm just looking at her thinking, you are the strongest motherfucker in the world, man. Because if that was me, I'd have crumbled. She was there on that fucking operating thing saying, like, I'm going to die. You know, I'm not going to make it. And I'm like, you are, but thinking, fucking hell, man, like, I don't know, I really don't know, and I'm praying, like, I've got everything crossed that you're going to be able to share this experience with me, and we're going to get through this, and we did, and this is why we, in my eyes, in my opinion, we will always be together, because we can get through anything. We got through that fucking early on in our relationship, so we will get through everything, all right, no matter what. So yeah, that was Travis. All right, after that, we had issues. We stayed in hospital for a bit longer than what we'd have liked, infections and whatnot. But luckily, Travis was somewhat healthy, touch wood. And yeah, Kirsty obviously got out of it. But let me just recount a few things of that. One of the things as well was I remember the first time Kirsty got out of bed, which was after like a day or something. It completely rendered her like useless for a good day. And that's not me digging her out. This is just fact. They had to take her organs. This is what I say when a cesarean is no joke. They had to take her organs out of her body, which is called exteriorizing, like her stomach and intestines and shit like that, and put it on a fucking tray. Imagine just your stomach and shit on a baking tray on the side next to you. I mean, granted, she can't see it. We can't see this thing. But she's a midwife. She knows. She can visualize it. And she's got a photographic memory. She knew. So it's mentally traumatizing. And she's had the extra pain of the fact that her organs have been put on a fucking baking tray and then put back inside her. Just, again, just think about that for a sec. Just think about that. Us men, we're lucky. We don't have that shit. You know, we might have to piss out a few kidney stones or something. You know? Or a finger up the arse to check the prostate, although they do blood tests now. So, yeah. That's Travis. God bless him. I fucking love him to bits. Harrison. We were trying and we wanted another baby. I'd have been happy either way, you know, it's a boy or a child. I mean, a boy or a girl. I'm joking. We were trying and Kirsty fell pregnant and we were buzzing. And everything was going sound, you know, went to the scan, all good. And then it turned out that Kirsty was at work, she was on shift, and she started bleeding really badly. Like really, really badly. And at the time I was at work, but I was, fuck, where were we? I want to say Birmingham, somewhere like that. And I'd been up with Ollie, the geezer I mentioned at the start of the video. He'd taken me up, and it was for like a safety conference for Buckingham at the time. And there was an announcement made that day, and didn't think much of it. And it was like, well, the main geezer was stepping down, and they put it down to his diabetes and ill health. And this new guy was going to come in and take over, and it was going to be a big change for Buckingham and all the rest of it. Little did we know that a month or two later, that was when Buckingham would collapse. Quite ironic that the start of the collapse was the day that Kirsty had her ectopic. You know, these things are weird. It's weird the way it works, where the world works, rather. So, yeah, I found out. She texted me, and she was like, "Do you know what breaks my heart the most?" Right, I was gutted. Obviously, I was gutted. We lost the baby. Excuse me. But what broke my heart the most was the fact that she kept apologising. She kept saying, "I'm sorry. You don't need to apologize to me. You don't. This isn't your fault. It obviously wasn't meant to be. It's not, you've not done anything wrong here, you know? Don't apologize." That's what got to me the most. Like, you don't need to apologize. We need to just sort you out. Let's get you sorted. Because without you, I'm nothing. All right? Simple. Right. So, that was obviously an awful experience. And yeah, she got so well looked after by her work. And I'm so grateful for everybody that got involved. Like, so grateful. So I can't thank the staff at her work enough. And I don't want to bring up where she works and things like that. Yeah, you know. So fast forward a few months, we've got obviously dealt with it in our own way. We've grieved a little bit, and you know, we've moved on. It was very challenging. It was awful. They were on about. We were lucky as well because they were on about with an ectopic. It basically grows outside your uterus, and it could have potentially blocked one of her tubes. And if that was the case, and it had been too big, that have again had to take out at least 50% of her like ovaries and fallopian tubes and shit like that, which then makes it harder to conceive and all the rest of it. So yeah, it would have been facing an uphill battle, and we've had our struggles, man. Like there's no fucking bones about it. But this is why I think we're fucking unbreakable, because we've just dealt with it and got on with it, and we love each other incredibly, and we got rewarded by Harrison. Harrison is our reward for that. However, Harrison does have his own story. So, fucking so vain, and I look at me sorting out with Barnett, Christ. So, yeah, I've got to try and recount, and this is weird. How can I recount almost Travis's easier that was years ago than Harrison's that was now? So, again, it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a Monday. And I've just clicked the button and fucking stopped the video. So that's really annoying. So hopefully I managed to like edit it well together. So it was a Monday, and yeah, Kelsey was like, look, I don't feel right. I don't think you should go into work. So I was like, okay, cool. So I contacted work, explained. They're like, yep, sound no bother. And I was constantly in touch with work, letting them know what was going on. So we went over, and it's a bit of a longer drive from where we live to where Kirsty was working, because again, ultimately she wanted to have the baby where she worked, because she knew loads of people there. She felt comfortable. She'd spoken through the fact that if she wanted to have it naturally, she could, and because of cesarean, things like that. And that's one thing I would suggest is, just because you've had a cesarean, and this isn't my opinion, this is a medical opinion, talk it through, because if you wanted to then have a natural birth, there is the possibility. Yeah, so speak through with your partner, encourage your partner. If she wants to do it, she can do it. Don't just be pillar boxed into, yeah, you've had one cesarean, you've got to have another. All right, and that's what I learned from that. So we went off, I know, like I said, a bit of a journey. We went off and done our thing. Cassie got checked over, and they were like, yeah, look, it's, I think it was like 1 or 2 centimetres, something like that. And it was, yeah, it was the start, but it was very early stages. So he was like, look, let's go for a walk. Let's go around and explore and go do some bits and bobs. And for me, it was the Euros 2024. So I was like, Sam, we can always dive in a booth and watch a bit of football, you know? So we did. We went off. We had a little walk about. Went, done a bit of shopping. A bit of shopping. Cost me an arm and a leg. Bearing in mind I'm having a day off and I'm, at this point, not getting paid for it. Anyway, moving on, you know, happy wife, happy life. We go and do a bit of shopping. Anyway, it kills the day. We grab some food. It's actually quite nice, you know. And it was a Monday, so Travis was at nursery, so we didn't have to worry about that. And we went back. We're like, look, you know, Travis got picked up from nursery, so we didn't need to rush home. And we stayed there for hours. We were there till quite late. I remember we were at the pub. We grabbed a bit of food. There was a pub not far from the hospital. We grabbed a bit of food. We're like, right, we'll eat this. You know, we'll go back, we'll get Travis, we'll go home. Sad. We've got to go back to the hospital though, because Kirsty's left her notes there in case obviously something happened. You have your pregnancy notes, she had to leave them there. So we went back to the hospital. Kirsty was like, go on, you just go and grab your notes, I'm uncomfortable. I said, no, I don't feel comfortable going in and, you know, this your colleague, your hospital. It's not me being awkward or lazy or fuck all. Trust me, I will do whatever I can for that lady. But I just felt like she should go in, you know, just in case. And she had like a niggling doubt. So that's why I kind of pushed it as well. So off she went. And I'm sat in the car. The car's running. The BM's running. The heat seat's on. I'm nice and cosy. I get a text. She's like, you better come in. They're keeping me in. Ah, okay. Okay, cool. She was like, I'll let my mum know. She's got Travis. Sweet. So in we go. Sound. We go in, and yeah, I don't know, is what it is. Well, we sat there chilling, yeah, all hooked up to the monitor. Yeah, they're going to monitor me overnight, buzzing, sound, happy days. So that goes on, she doesn't really progress, but she's in quite a lot of pain, which we both think's a bit fucking strange. So we're sat watching South Park on my phone, she's in bed, I'm in the armchair. Don't ever, this is another top tip I will give you, do not complain about the fucking chair that you're in, yeah? Or that it's uncomfortable, your neck hurts, or anything like that. Do not do it, yeah? Because trust me, that lady of yours is in much more pain. Much more, all right? So don't moan about it. Don't tell them you're tired. Don't tell them you're in pain. Yeah, just keep all your sort of inner thoughts to yourself and just be there. Be there for them, all right? At that moment, you don't matter. Your person does not matter. What matters is your baby and her and keeping them happy. Trust me on that. So it's getting late. I've had a pizza. Kirsty didn't eat. Fair enough. She's in pain. Offered it out to the midwives. If you're going to get food, yeah, offer it to the midwives as well. It's a nice touch, right? And it from her experience as a midwife, it goes a long way, especially if they're on the nights and stuff. So, yeah, try and offer them food if you're going to get food. I had to. It had been going on for quite a while. We'd been there quite a while and I was very hungry. I didn't really eat a lot at the pub because I thought we were just going to go back and grab food and, you know, do dinner as usual. So, yeah, it got to about 1 o'clock in the morning. Like I said, South Park's on. We're like, right, we'll have a little kip. Luckily, I grabbed an hour. I'm fucking grateful this hour. Trust me. Didn't know it at the time, but I'm very grateful for this hour. So I'm asleep. Kirsty's asleep. Next thing I know, bang, like that. Pain. Like I could not could not ever begin to imagine. I've had my appendix out. Trust me, I was in some fucking agony. This was next level shit, right? Because she's really bad. And Kirstie's got a very good pain threshold. And Kirstie's obviously already had a previous birth experience with Travis. So to see her going on like this, and then me go and get the midwife. And let me say, all the people at this hospital were fucking incredible. Such a contrast. I'm very grateful for the ones at Bedford. But fuck me, these people was a completely different experience. This hospital was fucking incredible. So good, everybody. Even to the point of the surgeon, the consultant that did the cesarean in the end. She made so much time for me as the dad and checked in with me. She even gave me a tissue when I bawled my fucking eyes out. Like, she just had so much time and respect for me as the dad. Although I'm not, like, the patient in this, she still appreciated my role in this. And that was very touching for me as a person. And I'm very grateful. So, yeah, I've gone in. She's like, go and get the midwife. Go and get help. So off I go. They come in. And she's worried because she works there again. And it's a different hospital. She's a bit like, oh, they're going to think I'm being a drama queen. I'm only 3 centimetres at this point, blah, blah, blah. They check her again. She's at 3 centimetres. Before, I made a joke that she was mooing. This is no laughing matter now. She is in the most amount of pain I've ever seen a single human being in my 32 years of existence. She was very bad. And she'll agree. Like I said, I'm so glad that we did not go and that we had this gut feeling to stay and that the hospital agreed that we stayed. And because it turned out that she was actually rupturing internally. Basically, her uterus was just tearing open. And this could be, I think we deduced, and that, well, not me and her, but the medical professionals deduced it was from the previous cesarean almost opening up. And this doesn't routinely happen, but where it's so complicated before, we think it's got to do with that. And she was quoted to have a paper thin uterus as well, which again could be previous. We don't know, right? But yeah, so that was very scary. And then what got to me, and I was comfortable in the fact that she knows these people and they're medical professionals. And at this point, there's nothing you can do other than stand by and watch and be supportive. But what got to me was when I saw blood. That's when I freaked. But again, you can't show it in that scenario. Don't show it. Yeah. The last thing she wants to look around at is see you in a state or crying. I am a crier. Men do cry. I'm a fucking crier. All right. It happens. When I had a minute to myself and they rushed in and were like, right, we need to get to theatre, and it all changed very quickly in the space of like 50 minutes. I had to ring our friend who was going to be the midwife for her. I rang her. She, big shout out to her again. I don't want to name names because I haven't got permission. So she just rocked up, yeah, and came out of nowhere. She is a fucking hero. But yeah, in that moment when I'm putting all the gear on again, it's like, wow, like, how can this happen twice to us? How can we be in this scenario where this cesarean is an emergency again and we're in a position where it's like panic? This is like more panic than the first time. So that's got me on edge. My heart's pumping because I knew how bad it was the first time. So obviously, automatically, you think, fuck, man. So she's in a state. We're both in a state. I had a moment of crying in the bathroom, but I dried my eyes. I was like, right, now you're gonna step out of this door and you're going to be as strong as you fucking can, whether you like it or not. And you're going to deal with this matter until this scenario is over. Good or bad, you're going to deal with this matter and then you can do what you need to do. Sound. We get in there, right? This gentleman that was the anaesthetist, I fucking loved him. Granted, disappointed Man United, but we bypassed that. But he made me feel so at ease, and Kirstie. There's his point, right? Bearing in mind, he's got this needle that's longer than this that he's got to jam in her spine to give her this spinal that numbs the whole bottom half of her body so they can cut her open, yeah? We've got to do it in between contractions. Kirstie's in a lot of pain. He goes to her, right, you need to lay on your side. So she's laying like how you would in bed on your side with your knees curled up to your body, right? And he's like, right, I'm going to do it, but you need to tell me if you're going to have a contraction, because obviously I can't do it then, because obviously there's very high risk of, obviously if the needle goes in the wrong place, that you're going to be paralysed. And you do sign all these consents and things like that, but he was like, look, just be honest, like, because I need to know. Kirstie being Kirstie, and this is what I love about her. She goes, well, you can do it now if you're quick. Yeah, yeah, because that's exactly what he wants to do. That's exactly what he wants to hear. Yeah, all right, I'll just fucking get it in there now because I've got an opportunity. Yeah, fair play, like. But he laughed it off, and he made me feel so at ease. And then this, the surgeon, the lady, the consultant, she came in, and I highlight the fact that she is a lady. And this is where men and women are very much equal, right? Had it been a man, I don't think I'd have felt as comfortable as I did the moment she came in. She came in like a, with this aura, not a cocky aura, but just like this presence around her of like, right, we're going to fucking do this. We're going to get this baby out of you. You, lady, you're going to be fucking fine, all right? And she was. She was. She said, and I quote, "You've given me a couple of more grey hairs there." But she fucking did it, man. She got that baby out. And a special mention to a friend that came out of blue. She just came out there, bang. Yeah, in she came. And she calmed Kirsty down that wind as well. So I've got so much time for her. But again, both of them made such an effort with me, because at this point, Kirsty can't see me. So I am crying. I'm quietly crying. The tears are streaming down my face, but I'm trying to be calm. And it's because it's not because of the moment. Granted, that is scary, but it's because of obviously that you start thinking of what happened before, and I'm just begging and praying that everything's going to be okay. And it was, and I'm so fucking grateful. Harrison came out as soon as I heard him cry. I was buzzing again. I got to cut the cord. Kirsty was calm, although she was worried. She was a lot calmer this time, and we've got that moment of holding him and cuddling him. And this was a lot smoother. We didn't spend as much time in hospital either. We done a bit in the morning. Obviously, was there for like a day or something like that. We got to go home. And yeah, it's just, I was always worried as well, because I love Travis so much. I was always worried that I would almost not love Harrison as much, because Travis was like my first, you know, my firstborn. I openly spoke about this. But let me tell you, you can love fucking two just as much. You can. And I didn't think you could, but you fucking can. And my mum always used to tell me, like, I've got two sisters, Belle and Flick, and they're fucking amazing. They're great human beings. And it's always been a running joke that I'm the favourite because I'm the only boy. Trust me, girls, right? If you are watching this, you are just as much loved. That's very bad English. But you're as loved as much as I am, and we are all equal. We're all equal favourites. Trust me, all right? So yeah, that's my story. That's the story of the births. That's level one, all right? And there will be more of a gaming theme, which is why I'm going to title it Levels and shit like that. I think it's a little bit quirky. Tell me if I'm wrong. Thank you all very much for listening. This has been incredible, and it's felt amazing to share this with everybody. And even if only one or two people listen, it's just nice for me to talk about it and tell you guys how much I love my kids, how much I love my future wife, and how much I love all of my family and all my friends. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Like, share, and subscribe. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.